It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
As I told you on Twitter, I'm finally doing something about my weight and my health. I found a solution for weight loss, and it's Awaken 180. My friends in the media told me about Awaken 180. It's their go-to program to lose weight without killing yourself in the gym or taking any kind of medication. Just listen to the success stories. My boy, Kyle Draper, he dropped 30 pounds. Andy Grish dropped 105, and that's not it. Scott Zolak, Steve Logan, Dan Reeves, Dr. Laura Carmen, and add Cedric Maxwell to the list. It's only been about 3 weeks, and I've already dropped about 15 pounds. Turn these trying times into a reason to get healthy like me. Call Awaken. Receive the same one-on-one coaching I'm getting at home or on Skype. Also access 1,000 recipes and tools you'll need to achieve weight loss from the company who has revolutionized the weight loss industry. Set up your first consultation today at awaken180weightloss.com.
Red Sox Beat is back on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio and visual content. Remember, visual content? This is Josh Lewin, and welcome to our continued waiting game. I hope everybody's doing as well as can be. Sean McAdam from the Boston Sports Journal is going to join us in just a little bit. We're going to talk our way through the very latest around baseball, a little bit about the Red Sox, obviously, best we can. Certainly the talk about if there's going to be baseball, if there's the possibility of the Red Sox now being in this weird division with a bunch of great teams, if that happens, that could certainly put a little dark spot on the outside chances that they were in the beginning to make a playoff run in 2020. But is there going to be a 2020? We're going to get to that. That's going to be pretty much most of our conversation here today. I sure hope there's a 2020 baseball season. I know you guys do too. Because if for no other reason, the scarier and more uncertain things seem in our day-to-day lives, I think the more important it gets to have an anchor. And for so many people, baseball is that anchor in their day-to-day lives. Sports and music are really the two universals. And there are people out there that aren't necessarily sports fans or wondering what's the big deal that there's no baseball for a while. And I always say, imagine an entire month, maybe several more, with a moratorium on music. If you're stressed, you can't listen to your favorite song. There's nothing on in the background as you work in your kitchen. That concert you were really looking forward to for months will now never happen. And that's kind of how lonely it's been for baseball fans. And that's why it's so important to get back to them just as soon as it's safe. And that is the key word to me. I hope it is to you guys, too. Safe. Can the game be played without fans is a question we're hearing a lot right now. And it may have to be for a while to keep everyone safe. Lots of spring training games are played in front of very few fans, and there are B games on backfields where there are no fans. So this is not unprecedented in any way. And in a strange way, I keep thinking maybe baseball can model for every sport and every social event in the country how to execute this slow roll back to normal. Keep it safe, make some adjustments for now as need be, keep looking forward to when things get back to how we've always known them. Is the Arizona plan real or the Arizona-Florida plan real? I get that one a lot, too. And I would say yes and no, because until testing is scaled and accessible to everyone, it's a very bad look to test only ball players in a bubble. I think everyone agrees we're going forward even talking about all this, assuming that testing across the nation will be a reality before too long. I don't mean to turn this into politics, but I can't believe that that's not the number one thing that's been tried over the last several weeks here. I mean, that's the thing we're all waiting on. So anyway, as it pertains to baseball, you're trying to do something memorable and positive from out of the embers here that every sports fan, not just every baseball fan, will remember for the rest of their lives. And of course, there are 100 reasons it might not work, but the spirit of ingenuity would resonate across the world. If you're trying baseball in a biodome or Baseball City, Arizona, and you bend the rules here and there for 1 year only, players are mic'd up all season long. I'm in on all that stuff. I would hope that somebody realizes that if you're playing in Arizona outdoors, you better be doing it early in the morning or late at night, because 115 degrees in Phoenix in the summer and coronavirus or not, to ask umpires and players to perform in that kind of midday heat every day, that brings up a whole separate health concern. And, you know, I know baseball obviously helped bring America back after 9/11. And we keep going back to this. A sense of familiarity is so important in any crisis. And baseball essentially is comfort food, you know, maybe more than any other sport in America, and certainly Latin America, too. And when something is scary, what do? You reach for what you know, and what you know to bring you joy. The little kids might reach for their blanket or their favorite toy. I think right now so many of us have that primal desire for baseball for exactly that reason. The crack of the bat, the sound of someone catching the ball, the green grass, that perfectly smooth dirt on the infield. It just puts you in a happy, familiar place. So baseball's return absolutely can serve as a beacon in the night. There's something familiar on the horizon even when times are dark. So that's kind of the backdrop to all this. I want to get to Sean McAdam here because he's going to take us through his thoughts on that and how, if it's possible at all, to navigate all the nonsense. What's the optics of this whole thing and how to best go about it? If it is going to be this wacky realignment, we'll get into that, because as of right now, the talk would be the Sox might be in a division with the Twins, the Rays, and the Braves. So that is suboptimal. But that's kind of way off in the distance to me right now. Right here, right now, before we even get to Sean, let me give you one reminder. With no Major League Baseball right now, with no basketball, no hockey, you might think there's nothing to bet on. And you'd be wrong about that, because our exclusive partner, BetOnline, still has hundreds of events and games and props you can wager on, from their online casino to poker and blackjack. They're bringing the Vegas to you. If you're missing the NFL, BetOnline has live daily Madden NFL 20 sims that you can wager on. Entertainment betting, you can still bet on Survivor and Big Brother and American Idol, stock prices, all that. Open 24 hours a day, all online. We invite you to visit the website or use your mobile device. Join today to receive your new welcome bonus. It's BetOnline, your online wagering solution. Without any further ado, let's bring on Sean McAdam. From the Boston Sports Journal, Sean McAdam is kind enough to spend some time with us now. And it's a weird minefield to navigate in so many ways right now, Sean. Journalistically, you know, you've got a beat to cover, and there is no beat. There is no baseball. There's no Red Sox. Although they're making some news off the field. And let's kind of start there, because I'm trying to keep things as positive as possible. I know you are, too. The sense that I get, I mean, the latest thing, the Red Sox talking about going to, you know, the local hospital and saying, all right, everybody, when all this is done, you guys are season seat holders. Come on in. You know, Ortiz going over and glad handing and keeping it safe, obviously, but doing what they can. I wouldn't expect anything less of the Red Sox. They've always been a leader in that department. But would you agree? I mean, they're trying the very best they can to find their way to lemonade out of lemons here.
Absolutely. And this has always been, I think, a pretty philanthropic organization, dating back to their long history with the Jimmy Fund and Ted Williams decades and decades ago. They've always encouraged participation in the community and outreach. And this is obviously the perfect time for that to continue. And to their credit, they are using their resources, using the power of celebrity and the power of kind of the bully pulpit that the Red Sox have here in New England to do some good. And that's always welcome.
So as we look at the schedule, and I don't know about you, I mean, obviously the schedule is crumpled up and thrown away, but I still have one. And as you and I talk, the Red Sox would have been 17 games into their season, and on a West Coast road trip would have been nice to be on right now. Major League Baseball, obviously, they floated this trial balloon about getting back to the field and doing it by creating this bubble, or maybe two bubbles, one in Arizona, one in Florida, that we could begin as early as next month, which I don't mean to poke a hole in a balloon. I just think that's such a pipe dream. But The idea to have players and staff essentially quarantined and play those games at the spring training facilities in Chase Field and yada, yada. Obviously, no fans, but there would be TV. Just in general, do you like the idea? I guess that's part A. And part B is there any chance it can work?
Well, as I've said, Josh, I think I'm going to get behind any sort of effort that gets us baseball in any shape, manner, or form. And I don't think I'm alone in that regard. We all miss the game terribly, perhaps never more so than when we're cooped up and have no live sporting events to watch. As glorious as the last 20 or so years of Red Sox history have been, there's only so many times you can watch the 2004 World Series or highlights from some of the other great postseason games they've taken part in this era. So we all want the game back, and I think it's going to require some creativity, some thinking outside the box. These are obviously uncharted waters we're in here. Everything is unprecedented, so there's no template to follow. And I know that some people have swatted back some of the proposals and said this isn't doable. And certainly there are huge obstacles to overcome in a lot of these areas, not the least of which, as you cited, is, you know, being essentially quarantined from your family and loved ones for 4 or 5 months' time. There would be a lot of logistics, a lot of things that would have to be ironed out. There would have to be the green light, first and foremost, from government and medical officials that this was safe. It would incorporate just dozens and dozens of people. When you think about what goes into, you know, just putting on your standard game, even if you have no fans, even if you don't sell tickets and you don't have to worry about ushers and security, you still have grounds crew, clubhouse people. I mean, the list goes on and on. But I think that if it can be done, then it should be done. And I think that's the attitude people should take to some of these proposals. Some of them seem more far-fetched than others. There would certainly be hindrances to either of the two spring training plans, one that had everybody in Arizona, another that had all 30 teams in their spring training homes, whether it be Florida or Arizona. You know, they've tried to get creative and toss out, in a couple of instances, any semblance of the standard American and National League formatting and have Grapefruit and Cactus League competition. If that's what gets us baseball for 2020, then fine, I'm all for it. But as you noted, I think we're a long way, both in terms of calendar and the number of things that would have to be overcome for any of these plans to be put into place.
Sean McAdam joining us on Red Sox Beat here. Again, we're out of season. We don't want to be out of season, but we are. And as much as we all want to watch baseball again, Sean, and you've hit on it, the game just can't get in the way of medical care getting to people who need it. And not to politicize this at all, but I just, you know, the one thing that makes me bristle a little bit, because you keep hearing, well, you know, we all rallied around it after 9/11, and we absolutely did. But when baseball started up again after the 9/11 attacks, it was kind of like an act of defiance, right? I mean, we were saying we're not going to be intimidated by terrorists. We're going to go on with our real lives. And that was a wonderful feeling for all of us. But you kind of hinted at it. Extra police and bag checks are not going to keep coronavirus from getting into a ballpark. So, you know, if one person dies because baseball started up too early, that's a really tough thing to explain.
Yeah, no question. I mean, as much as baseball has served as a bomb and a distraction for us in our most challenging times in history, whether it be World War II or the Korean War or 9/11, whatever has come about, sports and baseball more than the others, and I guess we could do a whole separate show on why that's the case, but right. It has always served to fill that void, and we would welcome it. But I think you make an excellent point, Josh, that back in September of 2001, it seemed like we were all united against an enemy that we at least knew something about. We could take precautions against it. And there seemed to almost be strength in numbers. I was at the 2001 World Series. I'll never forget President Bush throwing out that first pitch, the drama and emotion that surrounded that event and how unifying it was. This is not a political or military enemy. This is a medical and physical one. And in some ways, that makes it more insidious. And in other ways, it makes it much more difficult to combat because, you know, we don't know everything that we need to know about this virus. We certainly, as much as we want and need baseball and other sports back in our lives to get back to a regular routine, we don't want to be irresponsible and go back too soon and put others at risk. And that's the delicate balancing act that Major League Baseball has to juggle in determining when the right time to return is.
Want to draw our listeners' attention to the column that you did, Sean, most recently in the Boston Sports Journal at the front of the week. And it got my attention, not because I was not an econ major and economics actually makes my head spin right off my shoulders, but...
You and me both, Josh.
Well, but anytime you drop a Zimbalist in there, that had my attention. I'm seeing you quote Andrew Zimbalist, who obviously is a guy that knows a thing or two. So when you talked to the legendary economist Andrew Zimbalist about the what next regarding baseball, what did he have to say?
Yeah, well, again, as learned as and expert as Andrew Zimbalist is, one of the first things he said was, you know, we're kind of going into this a little bit blind here because we've never done it before. And before we can start imagining what the game will look like, not so much from a competitive standpoint, but from an economic one, we have to know a lot more about how soon that's going to be, what the condition of the general economy is going to be. But I think it's fair to say, and this is rather obvious, but nothing Andrew says is obvious. He's a noted, perhaps the foremost sports economist in the country, has served as a consultant to a number of different players' unions and associations, and has made this his sort of specialty niche within the economic world. And his message is that the landscape is going to be far, far different, and it's going to be that way for a while. Let's start with the fact that as we talk about these Arizona and Florida proposals, those are being constructed without any thought to playing before paying customers and fans. They would be played in front of empty stadiums. Eventually, we hope and pray that's not going to last forever. At some point, fans will come back to ballparks and other mass gatherings, like going to the movies, going to the theater, going to concerts, all the things that we enjoy. And people want and need that sort of communal experience. It's part of what attracts us to sports. Yes, we enjoy watching games in our living room in front of our 4K monitors with surround sound, but there's nothing that beats the experience of being at the ballpark and sharing that with others. For that to happen, though, a lot has to be done, and he's trying to envision what is that going to look like. Will there be a phase-in where teams sell every other seat with an empty row in between and thus reduce their capacity to about a quarter of what it is? So instead of a maximum of 38,000 or so at Fenway, there would be 9,500 or so. What's going to happen to ticket prices? A number of economists are forecasting almost unimaginable unemployment rates that could rival or even exceed those of the Great Depression, 25-30% of the country out of work. Can you still charge $150 for a box seat, or for that matter, $50 for a bleacher seat if you've got anywhere from a quarter to a third of the populace out of work? What does it mean for future collective bargaining agreements between the owners and the players? Does there have to be a recalibration there? And that's particularly a timely question with baseball, because their CBA expires in about 18 months. So these are all, you know, he went through a range of things that could be impacted. Long-term contracts. He noted that baseball, unlike football, hockey, and basketball, has no limit to the long-term contracts that are given out. You can only give out, 5 or 6 years in the NBA, 6 or 7 in the NHL. And as we know, the NFL doesn't have guaranteed contracts in the first place, or very few of them. Garrett Cole just got a 9-year, $340 million deal from the Yankees. Are such deals even fathomable going forward? And does that change the economics of the game? So there isn't a segment of the sport that won't come under some reappraisal, I think, when we come back. And that has nothing to do with the virus. Eventually there'll be a vaccine, there'll be treatment, and we'll be rid of this thing. But the long-term effects that it takes on the economy will go deep into the near future, certainly into 2021 and beyond. And how baseball and other sports react to that will be fascinating to watch.
I saw where Major League Baseball could lose about $2.86 billion in gate receipts if there's no fans or a canceled season. It's just an astonishing number.
Yeah, and this may surprise some people. It surprised me. The gate receipts or ticket sales only account for about a third of the sports revenue. There's a lot else that goes into it. TV and radio rights are significant, obviously, corporate sponsorships, merchandising, so much else is part of that baseball economic pie. But that makes some sense if you look at baseball as an industry that grossed almost $11 billion last year. If you take a third of that, that's, somewhere around $3.5 billion right off the top without any tickets being sold. And that's to say nothing of any sort of givebacks there might have to be on national TV deals for games that aren't played. It's going to take a significant chunk out of the sport's profitability. And we should add, just about every business imaginable under the sun is going to suffer similar consequences. But I think those that operate in the sports and entertainment field, which requires people to gather in big numbers, are the ones that are going to be among the hardest hit.
Yeah, Red Sox will be losing about $200 million in gate receipts. Yankees closer to $300 million. Sean McAdam visiting with us. And, just to keep it on kind of this economics bent, which I really didn't mean to go to, but I'm looking at, whether there's a shortened season, no season. Mookie Betts is the poster child for this. But, there are people that were supposed to have like this launch year towards free agency, might not get to launch. And obviously, we can kind of giggle thinking about how Mookie might not ever be a Dodger after all that, except for some spring training games. But Mookie, George Springer, Marcus Semien, Trevor Bauer, Marcus Stroman, Jackie Bradley Jr., they're all expected to become free agents this coming offseason, 20 into 21. And it's weird to think about how all of what we're talking about might impact that.
Certainly. And that gets back to the whole Garrett Cole conversation that we had a couple of minutes ago, where Andrew Zimbalist was wondering, without saying so, will that be the last mega contract we see in baseball for a while? Because as great a talent, and let's face it, Mookie was going to be the cream, and is going to be the cream of that free agent crop this offseason. And expectations were that he was going to get this huge deal that could rival or even top the one given to Mike Trout. But is such a thing imaginable in this post-virus landscape where revenues are way down, there's uncertainty ahead, and nobody is willing to make that kind of stake going forward, not knowing what the landscape is going to look like? It is fascinating to think about where, the Red Sox were pilloried for the deal of Mookie Betts. They may end up getting three pretty good young players and prospects for him. He never plays a single game from the Dodgers and then goes on a free agent market that has inexorably been changed, if not forever, then certainly for a long time, part of the great unknown to which we can't forecast.
So here's a what if for you as we kind of wrap things up and head towards the end. What would the Red Sox have done on the field this year if we had never heard of COVID-19? I mean, we're never going to know because it's a whole new landscape now. But let's pretend that when you were down in spring training before this all came crashing down, Ryan Weber really was going to end up the, you know, for all intents and purposes, the number three starter because of what was going on. Would the Red Sox have done okay? Would it have been a total wipeout? Would they have surprised people? What do you think?
I think it was going to be a tough year for them. I thought before Chris Sale went down with Tommy John surgery that they had at least an outside chance of, you know, in a everything goes right for them scenario, competing for maybe the second wild card, by which I mean, you know, a win total somewhere in the mid 80s to the low 90s. Again, that's if everything went well. They suffered no more further significant injuries to key players. A couple of guys stepped up that perhaps nobody expected to. They got some surprise contributions from some young guys or some journeyman guys. You know, I thought their lineup was good enough to still score a lot of runs, even with the loss of Mookie Betts. And I think that's still the case. But I don't think you can overstate what the loss of Chris Sale for the entire year means. People were hopeful that, you know, after, you know, rehabbing throughout the winter, that he was going to come back and at least approximate the pitcher he had been in 2017 and 2018, and, you know, be that kind of horse at the front of the rotation. And then you fill in with Eduardo Rodriguez as the number two and a healthy Nathan Eovaldi from the start, and then Martin Perez. And then, you know, you worry about the fifth, whether it was an opener or Ryan Weber. But boy, losing Sale to me changes everything. And frankly, I think they would have been fortunate to play 500 ball without him had they played an entire season. Now, if they play a shortened, delayed season, and we know it's already delayed and we can guess that it's going to be shortened by some stretch, if they play 110 games instead of 162, you know, go back and look at some other shortened seasons. You always have teams that surprise who, because whether it's a smaller statistical sample or the unknown of a shortened season, could they get hot for a couple of months and find themselves in playoff contention where that wouldn't have worked over a longer 6 month, 162 game season? Perhaps. But, you know, if I'm looking at it now objectively from a distance, as I said, I think the loss of Sale was a huge one, and that they would have been it would have been difficult for them to be postseason competitors.
So the last what if for you, and I bring this up only because I want to cross promote the other podcast along CLNS, which is the one I'm running about the throwback league, where we're pitting all the World Series teams from 1974 through 06 against each other in a bracket. We got some World Series losers in there too to round things out, but it's a 48 team field, Sean. 74 World Series winners, a lot of the losers in there too. So for example, the 75 Red Sox make that cut. 86 Red Sox as well. If you were to put the teams from 74 through 06 that played in the Fall Classic into a blender, play the games out, and I know it's, you know, it's a one game winner take all kind of thing every time, so it's, you know, we're not talking best of sevens. Just an educated guess on your part, because I've been asking everybody that comes on this podcast to predict the way of the other. Do you have a team off the top of your head that you think would end up king of the castle?
Well, you're outside my preferred team by about 3 years, because in my lifetime, the best team I saw, even though they only won one World Series, was the Orioles of the late 60s, early 70s.
That's a great Yep, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was, you know, and that speaks to sort of the randomness of the postseason, even when there were only two rounds of play where you play the LCS and then went right into the World Series. It's sort of a mystery to me how the Orioles of that era only won once, but they were up against the force that was the amazing Mets in 69, and then, you know, had to deal with some other great teams as well. But if you have to disqualify them, you know, that Reds team of the mid 70s was the most formidable offensive team. I don't know that their pitching would rank them among that. You know, the easy answer is those Reds teams from the mid 70s and then the Yankee dynasty of the late 90s. Pick, you know, 98 was probably their peak performance with all the games won and then beating the Padres in the World Series. So I would say that those two teams, the Johnny Bench, Joe Morgan Reds of the mid 70s against the Yankee dynasty that won three times in 4 years.
That was a very solid, educated guess backed by hard analysis. I like that very much. And it gave us an opportunity to cross promote the Throwback League. So go ahead and download wherever you get your podcasts, including this one. I want to promote Boston Sports Journal for Sean because he does such an amazing job of keeping Red Sox fans up to date and baseball fans in general. Thank you, buddy. Stay safe. I can't emphasize that one enough. And then hopefully next time we talk, we'll be talking about actual on-field Benintendi hitting home run kind of stuff. But in the meantime, best to you and yours. And thanks again.
My pleasure, Josh. Thanks for having me on. I enjoyed it. Please stay safe and hope to see you at a ballpark soon rather than over Skype.
The great Sean McAdam. I'm Josh Lewin. This has been Red Sox Beat.